I like Danzig more just because he also wrote most of the songs, and it was before Mother and all that, so it was still hip and cool, you know. Because that was my first time I delved into him, because I've only known Misfits as like the dad punk band, which I don't know why.
It's because you're a young boy, that's why.
Yeah, but like I knew about like Black Flag and you know, like Minor Threat and all the other bands.
Fugazi.
I related to all of them and I liked them a lot, and I knew what they're about, and you know, I knew all the aesthetics. But with Misfits, because I always saw it as like it had so much merch and like clothing, and I always just saw it and I was like, I always thought it was like a commercial punk band, which is like a lot different, because like Ramones was a commercial punk band, they were mainstream, but I still like them, but I never listened to Misfits. So once I started listening and diving in, I was like, oh, they're singing about, like, killing babies and stuff. So I was like, oh, okay, this isn't too bad.
So speaking of front men.
You and your smooth transitions.
I'm really good at it. I'm about as subtle as a brick.
So we've been having topic base for the last, this is our fourth episode, it should be. So we've had topic base for 3 in a row, I think.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to try to just depart from that a little bit, just to be a little bit more, smooth and also just off the top of the head compared to, I mean, you can only do so much with a topic, you know, and we're trying to fill time, but we're going to talk today about Gigi Allen, which if you're a, listener, you're probably not too familiar with him, I'd imagine. He's not, particularly mainstream as far as I know.
No, I don't think. I mean, I know a lot of people know like the name and stuff, but I don't think a lot of people like know the backstory.
Well, I mean, if you're like us, I know you've always been in the punk. You're particularly in the skate punk. I know for a fact.
More towards like when I was in my early 20s, but
yeah,
you're right. I was a pretty big scene kid in high school.
Well, you have like suicidal tendencies, like gear, and you had a Bad Religion gear and stuff. Gear, I don't know what I'm saying, is merch, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think Jake had a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah, Jake was big into screamo because he had a lot of bands I didn't know about. Like, I didn't know who Norma Jean was until I listened. Jake turned me on to him, and he had a couple.
Jake on to Norma Jean.
Exactly. Because he played a couple like hardcore screamo bands.
Yeah, he did.
Our brother Jake, banging the drams, and he was into a lot of different bands. I know. I didn't know him. I mean, the kind of music he like is kind of, for me, it's hit or miss. I can't listen to like a whole album. Like the Norma Jean, their first album, I think it is, or their second album. I can't listen to the whole thing, but I can listen to most of the songs on, because some of them I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, some of them do sound the same.
They get repetitive, and it's also just sometimes the screaming is too much for me. Where I'm
well,
like,
well, a lot of
no
that shit was experimental back then.
Yeah, that's
so, like, what's,
for sure.
What's old hat now? Back then, that was like the shit.
And that was like 03 or 04, maybe.
I don't remember, to be honest with you, but
I don't remember.
I remember I was dating a chick, I guess you could say, in high school, for like 2 weeks, and she gave me her Norma Jean shirt. And,
badass.
Yeah, it was a guy's shirt. Right. So I'm assuming it came from another guy who also liked...
Fuck it.
Yeah. And I was like, well, this is a pretty badass shirt. So I wore that shirt for like fucking 10 years until it got lost in the sauce, or I got too fat for it or something.
That happens. You get lost in the sauce. But yeah, I knew you were in the Black Flag and those kind of bands. I mean, you have a Black Flag tattoo on your wrist, which is badass.
No, it's not.
It's awesome, dude. The thing is, it's not quite yet like the barbed wire around the bicep. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, give it another 10 years, and all the guys from that era are gonna start. You're gonna see them, and be like, oh, you want one of those? Are you? You're still wearing Vans when you're like 55?
Fuck yeah, well.
Like you're fucking Tony Hawk or some shit.
I'm gonna be wearing skate shoes till I die, anyways.
I mean, look at my shoes. My tattered fucking Vans.
Yeah, it's not like you have another pair of Nikes that your brother Justin bought you that were $80 and are really nice and are just sitting up there.
The ones
I'm
really
staring at them right now.
The ones that are really nice because I've been keeping them nice.
because you don't wear them because you don't like them.
Those aren't them. Those are the ones Jake got me. You got me a maroon pair.
So you got other shoes from people that you never wear, too.
Fuck them. If I'm going to be honest with you, fuck them. Fuck you, Justin. I want to start shit. I wear shoes. I
wear shoes.
I want to beat... I mean, look... I mean, my shoes... I let people ride on them, and they're all tattered.
I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let this go. All right.
I'm going to let this one slide. This one could pass. I don't know. I just think my shoes have character compared to...
Oh, your shoes have character. Okay.
Yeah, they've been around the block. I mean, those are four years old, like, every day almost. And they're worn. I'm going to hang them up like you do on the power lines.
You know what that means, right?
Was that gang turf?
Yeah, it's to establish, like, this is my crack corner.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to actually do... I was saying, like, I'm going to hang it in that style somewhere around in my place once they're retired. Long. I'm going to get the exact same pair.
Like a fucking jersey?
Yeah.
Are you going to restore them?
No, I'm just going to leave them as is. We'll clean them and then leave them around as furniture. Just
definitely get the yellow around the fucking bottoms.
Well, yeah. And I'm going to do the same with my phone case, which is riddled with stickers. And it's just a signature trademark of my what's going on inside my head. But you were in the Black Flag as I got into them big, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I started going away from what I, because you know, for a long time you're just into the music that you're into,
yeah,
and you never really experiment outside of that. You're like, I don't like that. But I started experimenting with it because punk to me, the only punk that I knew was like Ramones. But then I realized like they're punk, but they're like,
it's like bubblegum.
It's like
bubblegum punk now.
Yeah, it's digestible punk. Because then I started listening to deeper stuff, and I was like. Okay. I was like, I can get behind a lot of this.
Well, I actually wasn't into Black Flag, and I was actually into Henry Rollins before I got into Black Flag.
Like Henry Rollins Band or just like him himself?
Just him in general, because I remember Dad used to watch the Henry Rollins Show, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Because, you know, when your dad doesn't pay attention to you,
yeah,
you want to like the things that he likes in the hopes that he will notice you.
Miller Lite, Cars. we love our dad, but, I mean, we got to be honest. You know, about some stuff.
So I started getting into Henry Rollins' show, and I would just listen to him, and I'm like, yeah, this dude's hitting on a vein that I want to tap into,
mm-hmm.
You know, just angsty as fuck. And he started to also, like, because he would have other bands play, and that's how I discovered, like, the Mars Volta. That's how I discovered, Blood Brothers, all that shit. And, like,
Great bands.
Turned me on to this whole new scheme of music that I had never before, like, heard.
Yeah. I mean, we're not particular. I've said particularly four times today.
You really have?
Yeah. I'm not really...
Say it again. Particularly.
I'm not really into pop music. To be honest, I kind of hate it nowadays. I know... It's just because I've just broadened my horizons to so many other different genres and, you know, bands and groups and artists that when I listen to it, I'm like, I can't get with it at all. Because I listen to so many different things. When I listen to that, I'm just like, well, this is what everybody's consuming at once right now.
I don't know, man. I feel like, I know when you get older, you're supposed to be like, that's not music. This is music.
Yeah.
But I listened to WAP the other day. In my truck, and I was like, this is the shit. This is fucking awesome. Like, I just leaned to that shit. I played WAP, and then I played Body by Megan Thee Stallion. Mm. Like, that shit, like, gets me pumped for some reason.
I love them. I love Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion as artists, but I just can't get with their songs. Not necessarily, like, the beats or, like, the way that they're rapping. It's just, like, the lyric content, and it's, like, the whole aura surrounding it. I just can't really... I don't get it, because I'm like... It's like hypersexuality at its highest, but it's which is fine, which is not a big deal. But the thing is that it's like the number one song in America, which is the part where I'm like, I don't really get it, because it's like they probably wrote it, but it's also like somebody else made this beat on a computer, and then
I feel like the draw is empowerment.
It's yeah, but is it really empowerment, or is it just like blatantly just talking about sexual innuendos and just innuendos?
A little bit calm A, a little bit calm B.
Because, I mean, I've heard empowerment music. Like, I'm really into, like, Bikini Kill, you know, Riot Girl, and that whole, 80s, 90s whole. And, like, we had the Breeders a couple episodes ago. Like, those bands I'm really into. And their lyric content isn't necessarily empowerment, but it's still, you know, there's still female-led bands with female counterparts.
So what
and
you're saying
sing.
Is that it's not a one-note kind of thing?
Well, it's just like, I just don't see how it's like talking about how sopping wet my pussy gets when somebody fucks me is empowerment, you know what I mean? I understand you're throwing it out there, but it's also like, it's like, okay, I can't relate to it when I'm listening to it. And
well,
I
also, because you're man. That's
well, I know that, but that's not what I mean. Like, when I mean relate to it, it's just like, it's just so to the point, and it just doesn't seem, I just don't get how, what's the big thing about it. I listen to it, and I get down with it, but it's, I don't like that kind of music today.
Okay, so you'd rather listen to Hole, where fucking Courtney Love just says, slut, bitch, won't you sell her, smack, is she pretty, the inside.
But I can watch her play a G chord while she does that, you know what I mean? She's not just twerking on stage, rapping into a mic. That, and I'm going to be honest with you, any live hip-hop show today sucks so bad. I love the music. I don't mind hip-hop music or anything, but the thing is, the live show sucks so bad because it's a guy standing at a desk with a computer, and then there's Travis Scott yelling into a mic that has auto-tune running through it, which I think auto-tune... I hate auto-tune so much. I don't get it. Are you going to disagree with me here? I see your face.
No, I don't know dick about shit about music, so...
Auto-tune is horrific, and it's what every rap artist use now, because they don't really... I think it's just because they don't have a naturally good-sounding voice, and they're not naturally singers, but they can rap, which is a talent within itself, obviously, and they can freestyle and stuff like that, but they have to use auto-tune, which I just can't stand, because it's like...
I feel like almost a lot... I feel like 98% of bands nowadays use auto-tune, probably.
Not bands as much as just solo artists. It's mainly just the pop artists. That's all it really is. Or some other people have used it for actual like musical endeavors where they use the autotune as an instrument, but they're just using it because they don't have a good voice, but they have the pop image, which is another thing that I cannot stand, is the whole like, your image comes before your music, and it's like, well, what's the whole fucking point of having an image, you know?
Do you think Gigi Allen would have used autotune?
Gigi Allen, let's talk about Gigi for a little bit. Now, Gigi is a man you love to hate, but you hate the love, you know what I mean? Because Gigi
introduced me to him with a fucking, well, not to him. I knew of him, but like, I'd never heard his voice. I never really listened to his music at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew his story. And the first video I ever saw of him, like, speaking and, like, talking about music is that fucking talk show thing that you showed me where he looks insane.
It was like Barbara Streisand or somebody interviewing him. It was in, I'll pull up the info.
It's like the whitest 80s, well, it's
soccer mom
it's
type
1993, but it's still like
demographic. Yeah,
the 80s theme is still riding into the 90s at that point. But
yeah, because we're Gigi was one of the lead. He was one of the lead frontmen during the whole like late 70s, like underground when punk was still underground for the most part.
Yeah,
and it was really really powerful. It was more about energy and emotion than it was technicality and your song playing ability and writing, but. Gigi came sort of from that whole Black Flag scene in a sense when it comes musically and also just the whole era and scene at that time, which we were talking about Henry Rollins, who's I think one of the best frontmen in punk history, and we're talking about us a show of his where he would start off the show by reading excerpts of poetry by Arthur Miller, the famous playwright who wrote The Crucible and married Marilyn Monroe. He would read about it while wearing short shorts and a fishnet tank top, littered with tattoos, inside of a bar that probably has 50, 17, 18-year-old kids in 1978. And then he would continue to sing about, what would he sing about? Rising above power, going to prison, killing people, drinking beer. And just for me, that was really just, it was punk in one fell swoop, just when he was sitting there reading from an Arthur Miller poetry excerpt in that outfit.
I was listening to a vinyl, and it was like My War, and I remember listening to one of his songs, and then the next song was Family Man, where he literally just says Family Man over and over again for like fucking
so awesome.
2 minutes. Family man, you a family man? Yeah, family man.
The thing is, if you sit there and listen to it with headphones in, you're not going to get it.
And I was so fucking creeped out. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I had no idea. I was like, is this supposed to be part of it? Have I lost my mind?
If you watch any live performances, you'll get it. Because if you were there, you'd be losing your mind just at the high energy, the power chords just shredding through your body.
It's weird because he has so much fucking energy
mm-hmm.
that he brings to his performances, but his voice is so fucking
calming. It's just monotone and just,
like, very
yeah.
chill, and, like, he could read the dictionary and he'd be entertained. You know how, like, people say, like, someone's like a bull in a china shop? He's mm-hmm. like a bull in a china shop, but he's not wrecking the place. He's like, admiring it, and then he's fucking it up.
Yeah. So, Gigi was kind of from that. So, okay, Kevin Michael Gigi Allen, born Jesus Christ Allen.
That's his
God-given name, as they say. That's his birth name. Jesus,
Ezekiel Jesus.
His name is Jesus Christ Allen. He was born August 29th in 1956. He died in June 28th, 1993.
That is so weird to think that that dude was born 6 years after Grandma Clark was fucking born.
Yeah, after our grandparents were born, he was born, which Gigi did not live close to a long life, really. I mean, he didn't die as young as some people did. Like, Sid Vicious was 21 when he died, which is wild to think about. Punk counterpart, but he was a punk rock musician and songwriter, which I just love that they just put that first off. You know, he was known for his controversial live performances. So he was born in 56 in, I believe it was, he was born in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And so he was born, his name was Jesus Christ Allen. And his father had told his wife that Jesus Christ had visited him and told him that his newborn son would be a great man in the vein of the Messiah.
As you do.
As, I mean, it's 56, and they're in, I'm pretty sure Lancaster, New Hampshire is like buttfuck nowhere in New Hampshire. It's like not even close to like the city or anything.
Wasn't it like a small state?
Yeah, New Hampshire's tiny. It's like Delaware, like Rhode Island around there.
Probably huge as fuck.
Yeah. So during childhood, Alan's older brother Merrill was unable to pronounce Jesus properly and started calling him Gigi, which became Gigi.
That's actually fucking adorable. I don't know about you, but that's
older brother Merrill. Merrill Allen.
Calling him Gigi because he couldn't say Jesus.
He can't say the second coming of Jesus Christ.
That's fucking cute. It's kind of like how Gabriel would, like, he couldn't say Justy, because Justy is, you know, my cute name, Justin.
Who's Gabriel?
Our cousin.
Okay, thank you.
You fucking asshole.
No, I'm just fucking with you.
And he couldn't say Justy because he's, you know, like, fucking little, so he'd call me Dutty. And for, like, fucking years after he was able to pronounce Justy, he was like, hey, Dutty, what's up?
Just fucking with you. I don't have any nicknames, and I will never want to. I hate my name so much.
I think I know a nickname you have that mom calls you all the time.
What's that?
Lily. For people that can't see this, he's so fucking angry right now.
You have no fucking idea how mad that makes me. She says it in public, in the store. She would yell it across the aisles in front of anybody. She does not give a fuck, and it pisses me off, but I can't do anything. She's my mother. So I just get
you
so...
Stone Cold Stunner if you fucking want
it. I just get passive aggressive and I just start throwing shit for no reason. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, fucking nothing. Don't fucking worry about it. So I call her Shannon for the next 3 days. I hate it so much. It's so... You know, it's not even... Because, like, at least if your name is...
New Hampshire isn't that big. Okay, sorry.
No, it's not big at all.
It's not that big, but it's not that small either.
No, it's like... It's around Vermont and Maine.
It's like a quarter the size of New York. New York State, not the fucking city.
Yeah. So that's how Gigi got his name. Okay, so Gigi's family lived in a log cabin with no running water or electricity.
That's metal as fuck.
Noted. Noted. His father was an abusive religious fanatic who threatened his family with death, digging their graves in the cellar and threatening to fill them in the near future.
Surprise, yeah.
This is Gigi's childhood, and this is what formed him to become the man he later did. An essay entitled The First 10 Years, Allen wrote that Merrill Sr. wanted to kill his family in a murder-suicide. He despised pleasure, and allowed his family very little contact with others. They lived in a primitive existence and were more like prisoners than a family.
Well, I mean, when you... And I'm sure his dad probably couldn't see that, but, like, if you put your family in a box like that, eventually it's going to implode on you.
Especially when you're in that kind of environment with no electricity, no running water, you're completely shut out from the outside world. It's going to pent up inside of you as a child. You know, everybody knows that from personal experiences. You know, I'm sure everybody has something that they just shove back in. But the thing is, when, like, your whole existence and your whole life is just you trying not
to fucking
cover
up.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that you just don't want to be in, don't want to happen. And, you know, your parents are like that, completely abusive. You just shove that down. And for Gigi, I think it just kept shoving down until...
Yeah, some people turn to the bottle, some people turn to drugs, some people turn to... beating up people while they're naked at shows. And
yeah, well, we'll get to that. But for Gigi, it turned the music, okay? Yeah, so they're more like prisoners than family. Allen also stated that his mother attempted to escape before she filed for divorce, but Merrill Sr. thwarted the attempt by kidnapping Allen, the young Allen. Allen said that he was glad to experience such an upbringing and that it made him a warrior soul at an early age.
Warrior soul.
At least he could look back on it. I mean, this is way better than what he could be looking. He could be in a mental institution at this point, but we'll get to that. So in 61, his mother filed for divorce as his father's mental instability was worsening. Allen and his brother were, from that time, raised by their mother and stepfather in Vermont in 66. Finally, his mom changed his name from... Jesus Christ Allen to Kevin to Kevin Michael Allen during his first year of schooling to avoid any, you know, type of...
I like how she went from, like, Jesus Christ Allen, which is, like, the craziest you can be, to Kevin Michael, like, the most whitey... When I think of a guy When I think of a guy named Kevin Michael, I think of, like, a dude whose, like, dad owns, like, a dealership and, like, a yacht.
His dad's, like, a lawyer or something.
My dad works on Wall Street, and he said that you really shouldn't be raising the minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's actually bad for them.
You wouldn't know. I mean, if you just worked harder, everything would be easier. Don't you know? So, his mother had allowed his birth name to stand up until that point and finally changed it to give her son a second chance at a mockery-free childhood. A second chance after years of abusive religious garble by his father. And this was his new beginning. Allen, a poor student, was placed in special ed.
Well, I mean, you live in a fucking log cabin in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. You don't know math until fucking...
Why the fuck would you put this wild animal into a regular class in the first place?
Oh, man. I feel like they should have...
2 months ago, his name was Jesus Christ. You know what I mean?
A log cabin.
2 months ago, he was living in a bare log cabin with no electricity or running water. His name was Jesus Christ.
And his dad was trying to bury him in
His dad was trying to commit double murder-suicide, and now they're like, he's not fit for regular class. It's like, no shit.
Let's try to teach him trig.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's a poor student, obviously. He went to special ed classes, but he had to repeat the third grade. According to his older brother, Merrill, he experienced bullying by fellow students for nonconformity. Now, this is the late 60s, I think, mid-60s.
So okay, Kevin really Michael. Young.
Yeah, Kevin Michael.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
In what year? 7. No, it was not year 7.
My dad said that everything began when Moses... when the fucking flood came.
When the arc hit. So, he said he's bullied. In his second year of high school, he began attending attending school cross-dressed, which he said was inspired by the New York Dolls. Which, I guess that's also his way of kind of escaping in a way, because
it wasn't Moses' ark, it was Noah's ark. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was bothering me.
That was bothering you?
As soon as it came out, I was like, that's not right.
That's not right. Anyways, Jesus Christ Allen.
Not a great student.
No.
Wearing dresses.
So he started wearing dresses inspired by the New York Dolls, which I get because the New York Dolls were pretty badass at that point, especially in that area around Vermont, New York, New Hampshire, that whole East Coast thing. They were dominating. This was like, I think early 70s at this point, if he was born in 56. So yeah, this was like early 70s, which is, this is early punk. So this was like Stooges, stuff like that. Black Sabbath was just getting off, which is metal, but it was still, you know, in the same vein. And so he would, when asked about his childhood, Alan said that it was very chaotic, full of chances and dangers. We sold drugs, stole, broke into houses, cars, did whatever we wanted for the most part, including all the bands we played in. People even hated us back then.
And this is Vermont.
Vermont.
That's what's up.
I'm sure they went to the city, though. Yeah. Because back then, it was...
I like to think of him and Bernie Sanders just, like, hanging out at a show.
I don't know why that seems, like, doable.
It does.
Like, you see Bernie Sanders at a fucking G.G. Allin show.
I am once again asking you...
I'm asking you...
to beat the fuck out of each other and get in this pit.
Once again, asking you, bite it, you scum. we'll get to what that means in a second, but so I'm just gonna go straight into. I'm just going on Wikipedia, so I don't know how exact and factual this is, but I mean, what do you want? I mean, what kind of? I mean, why are you? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to fucking research all day for it?
Yeah,
kind of. I did some research, mainly videos, which is what you really need to watch. If you're listening, just look up G.G. Allin. It'll come up. Don't worry. They know exactly what you're looking for. So is Allin's earliest musical influences were the 60s British Invasion. So, like, the Beatles, the Stones. The Who, Dave Clark Five. And in the early 70s, Alice Cooper became a very important influence, which I can understand.
That makes sense.
It kind of reflects in his music and also in the image in a way. Because if you think about it, G.G. was completely original. I mean... For those if you're listening, though, you probably, we're already, because right now you just understand his childhood, so you don't understand exactly what became quite yet, but we'll get to that. Allin's earliest recorded musical endeavors were as a drummer, where he wrote most of the songs on his acoustic guitar, and in his mid-teens, he and his older brother Merrill, who plays bass guitar, formed their first band, Little Sister's Date, which lasted over a year. Hey, man, it's punk. I don't know what to tell you.
Is his brother Merle the guy that we saw that was wearing the Ku Klux Klan shirt?
I believe so, yes.
With the fucking weird-ass Hitler stash, but, yeah. Like, that guy had a really cool haircut.
Yeah, and he's somehow holding it up, like, at the age 55, yeah. Where it's like, that does not fly anymore, but... the group covered songs by Aerosmith, Kiss, and other popular rock bands of the time, which I just think... I'd find it funny imagining G.G. doing Aerosmith and Kiss covers... Living in an elevator.
And Steve Tyler come out his fucking super ugly ass.
This is when Aerosmith was on fucking heroin, though. This is when they were writing hits.
Did they ever stop?
No, that's the thing is they went on hiatus and everybody quit doing drugs and then they started making like, you know, rock pop, you know, like just and not even it has no edge to it. It's just straight up pop songs.
My whole life, I've always felt like that Aerosmith has only had three songs, and I can never think of anything else.
Yeah, it was like Sweet Emotion, Dream On, Living in an Elevator, or whatever it's called. Love in an Elevator.
Yeah. And then they did something for that movie Armageddon.
Yeah, and that's basically their... That's their discography for me.
The best of
I'm not
four
a huge,
fucking songs.
I'm not a huge fan of them. I mean, I like Aerosmith, but I'm just not a huge fan of the music and there's the whole thing. Kiss, which I think is... Kiss is, like, the fakest metal. Even though they are, like, a pioneer of metal, it's just that they hit a point where, like, they weren't cool anymore and they're kind of just... They're, like, cartoon characters, you know?
Well, I think looking back on it, you could say that, but living in that moment in the context of that time, that shit must have been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, insane. Like, okay, think of it this way. We watch... It from 1990 now, and Pennywise is like kind of scary, but he's more laughable now. And back then, I remember distinctly feeling my balls retract when I would see him on the screen.
Yeah.
So I think you need to give Kiss a little bit more credence here.
I just think they're one of those bands where they were. Just turn the mic off. I think they were together for too long. You know what I mean? Where like they were cool for a while, but then after a while, it's like. And now Kiss presents the Pepsi Company tour of 2001, and it's like, Jesus, they're still together, and they're,
it's
they
Kiss
got the makeup.
And the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, it's like really, you guys have no
meet Scooby-Doo.
Have no balls anymore? Like, what's going on? You used to like punch each other in the mouth and on stage.
You used
and
to
shit.
Vomit blood on
yeah,
your grandma.
Yes, dude. So they're in their band Little Sister's Date. They were they're covering Aerosmith and Kiss songs. Both Alan and Merrill gained a strong interest in punk rock. The Ramones and the Stooges were major influences on Alan.
I feel like the Stooges have been like just an influence on everybody.
Because, dude, the Stooges were doing what like Black Flag and Rancid and all those other punk bands were doing.
But it was like 20 years before.
But it was like 68, 69, which like, at the time was like not even
an
heard
insane
of.
Time to be doing that.
Yeah. Because that was at the same time of, like, The Doors and just, like, other just, like, classic rock bands. And the Stooges were just completely in left field, which at the time, they didn't have a huge following. But, like, maybe 5 years later, they were, like, more influential in so many new bands. And within 10 years, they were, like, the gold standard of original punk.
Also, fun fact about Iggy Pop, he is a Midwesterner. He's from Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah.
He still performs without a shirt. He's like fucking 78. A. He does not. He still looks
hey,
good.
Man. Yeah, he still looks good. He's all his skin is giving out before his body is giving out.
But yeah,
I remember watching a fucking awesome. Documentary of him like 10 years ago, and he was they asked him because he had just got done with a show, and they asked him like, so do you feel like your body you know it has to pay for this the day after? And he's like, it takes. A constant toll. It was like, Jesus, fuck. And that was 10 years ago, and
that's
he's still fucking doing it.
He's still getting at it. He's been doing it for 50 years, I think, now.
But I remember him saying, it takes a constant toll. And I felt that in my fucking soul. I was like, Jesus Christ.
You've seen him dance
yeah.
on stage? The
this
shit
dude's
he does.
Been on spin cycle for like yeah. 60 years.
So, the Ramones and Stooges were huge influences. And then he graduated from Concord High School in Concord, Vermont in 75. Shortly after... formed the band Malpractice with his older brother.
That's a badass name for a band.
Yeah, with his older brother and local musician Jeff Penny. Or with his older brother and then a local musician Jeff Penny and another high school friend, Brian Doomers. Alan played the drums for Malpractice until the band separated in 77. And then from 77 to 1984, Alan started fronting the Jabbers.
Not as cool.
Not as cool, but his punk name. Their 1980 debut always was, is, and shall be for Orange Records. In addition to singing, he would play drums on most tracks, G.G. Allen. It would be reissued, blah, 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 blah. Tension within the Jabbers mounted as Allen grew uncontrollable. Okay, hold on. Okay, tension within the Jabbers mounted as Allen grew uncontrollable, uncompromising, and vicious. The Jabbers disbanded in spring of 84. Their second to last show was opening for Charge GBH, another punk band. He fronted many acts during the 80s, released a couple albums. He remained in the underground hardcore scene, but he wasn't a part of the East Coast hardcore scene.
Distinctive.
Yeah, well, during this time, that was a big difference because it wasn't like, you know, today you could just stream any band, but back then it was like you had whatever band was around. And if they were on an independent label, they were only on that label. It wasn't like, you know, back then it was just your buddy would start a record company. He would get distribution somehow through a third party, and then you would release it there. But it would only release at record stores around you, unless you got huge.
So every single release was like a limited release?
Pretty much, yeah. They have them today, obviously, but back then it was just... whatever was around at your local record store was what you're listening to. And it was a lot of it was the big record companies like Capitol and later on Geffen and all these other huge ones. So yeah, back then, if you weren't on a big record label, which was, you know, on the big record labels, you'd be international. You know, your record is everywhere. But if you were like these guys, where it's just like you would just go into a studio, record it, a studio your buddy owned, and then your buddy knew a guy that had a record company that did that
kind
of music.
Uncle Jerry, his best friend.
Yeah, he owns Black Society Records or whatever it is. That's how you got like Death. That's how Death Row came about, like Death Row Records, and you know all the rap labels are a bit different, because they had a lot of big names and like one compared to these, whereas like you would just start one just for your band, and then you would, you know, recruit other bands as you got bigger.
Yeah, I've noticed that like a lot of bands, as they get bigger, they start their own, and then they fucking launch others, and then they get tired of their shit, and then they start their own fucking label.
So he was part of the underground hardcore scene at that time, which was more, I want to say it was more like, it was like those really, you know, like dirty, I don't know exactly the band. Black Flag was kind of underground, I guess. This was like 82, 83.
Like living out of a fucking van down by the river.
Yeah, like rapping about, you know, killing people and stuff, compared to like the East Coast hardcore, which was like Fugazi, like DC bands, yeah. New York bands, a lot of stuff
Bad
like that.
Brands.
Yeah, Ramones, all that. So he, this was... He released albums as the frontman for three different bands in 82 and 85. The bands were the Cedar Street Sluts.
Yes.
The Scumfucks.
Fuck, yes.
And the Texas Nazis.
Holy fucking shit.
I am not creative at all, dude. Look at these fucking... These names are badass. I am not... I could not come up with a better name if I tried. And they fit his
MO.
Yeah, his image so perfect. His performances.
If you had mentioned those names when I first came in here, and said, Justin, who do you think is in these bands? And I would immediately have said G.G. Allin, probably.
G.G. Allin, frontman. So his performances in Manchester, New Hampshire, with the Cedar Street Sluts, earned him the nickname of the Madman of Manchester.
Sounds like a serial killer.
Yeah. He gained wider attention with a cassette-only release of Hated in the Nation, which was a solo, but it was tracks of Allen's out-of-print catalog with the Jappers, Scumfucks, and Cedar Street Sluts. Hated in the Nation is also probably his best-known piece of, a whole album. Besides his greatest hits, Hated in the Nation is probably the only, like, steadfast album that everybody knows when it comes to this world. So the tape features several in-studio and in-concert recordings with an all-star band assembled by the producer. Damn. The band featured Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr. on lead guitar, which...
I find it fascinating how interconnected so many different bands are.
That's insane, because Jay Maskus, A, at this time was like 19 or 20, first off. And second off, his music is complete different. I mean, it has punk influences, but it's more of like a alternative rock kind of thing, where it's more like it's more like Nirvana and Sonic Youth in that, you know, sense. So that's wild. And then so in the mid to late 80s, Allen was addicted to alcohol and generally abused any toxins provided to him. And I said that sentence like I've never read a word in my life.
Intoxicants.
But he was addicted to alcohol and pretty much anything you'd give him. So,
glue, gasoline, whatever the fuck is around.
Didn't fucking matter, man.
Silver paint.
Didn't matter. The very next sentence.
Did it say silver paint?
No, hold on. The very next sentence after we read all of this, which if you just don't know the guy and you read all this, you'd be like, oh, he's just like a punk guy. He was in the hardcore shit. The next sentence is, Allen first defecated on stage in 1985.
Yes, yes.
At a show in Peoria, Illinois.
Peoria, Illinois.
Yeah. According to his fellow performer, Bloody Mess, I was with him when he bought the X-Lax. Unfortunately...
He didn't have one in the chamber?
Yeah.
He just had to fucking...
Unfortunately, he ate it hours before the show, so he constantly had to hold it in or he would have shit before he got on stage.
That's the first thing he does when he gets on stage.
After he shit on stage... Complete chaos broke out in the hall. All the old men in charge of the hall went fucking nuts. Hundreds of confused punk kids were flipping out, running out the door because the smell was incredible. Defecation became a regular part of his stage act.
I'm just wondering how many, like, groupie chicks, because there had to be a few that were just like, this is my dude. This is fucking...
So this was, I think, the turning point where the drugs and alcohol began to wear down on his already... unstable mental.
So what year is this?
Function. This is like 80, mid 80s, 85.
Really?
85 was the first time he defecated on stage.
Okay.
So he already had like 10 years of punk experience and like
so
musician.
He's in his last decade by this time.
Yeah, but this was when he was severely addicted to alcohol, anything. So he was doing heroin, coke, all of that. And this is when I think that mixed with his mental instability became unraveling, and the defecation became a one
a
of the
staple.
Yeah, it was part of the lineup. Allen idolized country music legend Hank Williams.
Fuck yeah, he did.
And saw himself as a kindred spirit. Both were relative loners and outsiders. Both were habitual users of drugs. Both lived with few, if any, possessions, and both traveled the country relentlessly. I guess in that aspect, you could relate to him. When it comes to songwriting, I would have to disagree. Unless Hank Williams has led a band called the Scumfucks, I refuse to believe there's any other...
What was the Texas Nazis?
Texas Nazis. So, Allen's... He released an acoustic EP heavily influenced by Williams. He recorded rewrites... He recorded rewrites of Hank Williams Jr.'s Family Tradition and David Allan Coe's Long-Haired Redneck, calling his own versions Scumfuck Tradition and Outlaw Scumfuck.
That's what's up.
So he has a fucking image, and he knows what he's doing.
He has heroes.
So, and then later, Allen also released another country album, Carnival of Excess, his most refined record. During this period, Allen collaborated with Bulge, the AIDS Brigade.
These names. These names Bulge, are really great.
The AIDS Brigade.
Oh my. This is in the mid-80s, too.
And the Holy Men. Hey, dude. It was... I mean, okay. I'm going to say before I say this next album name, I'm going to say that this is what the album is called. This is not any of our personal opinions or anything that we would say in any type of instance.
I'm on the edge of my fucking seat here.
So the name, the album that he released with Bulge, who at the time was known as Psycho, was called Freaks, Faggots, Drunks, and Junkies.
Okay.
And then the AIDS Brigade album was called Expose Yourself to Kids.
Oh.
And the Holy Men album was, guess what the Holy Men album was called?
Dude, you just gotta tell me.
You Give Love a Bad Name. So you went from Freaks, Faggots, Drunks, and Junkies to Expose Yourself to Kids to Give Love a Bad Name.
Well, the thing is, I feel like the
Which
last
is a Bon Jovi
one,
song, I'm pretty sure, too.
The Holy Men album, yeah, actually, to me, sounds the most dangerous because, like, any of those other ones, you know what you're getting into.
Oh, no, this one, yeah.
With the Holy Men and You Give Love a Bad Name, like, I just picture them dressed up like the Beach Boys in the front of the cover. It's completely not what that is as soon as you listen to it.
Allen also began performing many spoken word pieces.
Oh, shit.
Video footage of these are available, but rare. Unwilling to seek steady employment, Allen supported himself by selling his own records. He was also fascinated with serial killers. He wrote to and visited John Wayne Gacy in prison a couple of times, and Gacy painted a portrait of Allen, which became the album cover to the soundtrack of the film Hated, G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies, which is another band that he was in. So... I mean, he got up close and personal with John Wayne Gacy by the sounds of it. So, big influence.
I was not expecting that.
But to see it written out like this is just like, it's like, oh, okay. It's more of a hobby. But the thing is, like, this is Gigi's life.
Yeah.
You know, this is everything. Like, whatever he was
eats,
doing.
Breathes, sleeps.
Yeah, he was, don't get me wrong, Gigi was a horrible, horrible man. But the thing that gets me and makes me respect him is the fact that Gigi's life was literally whatever was happening at that moment. He was never planning and he was never looking back. He was always just what's happening right now is what's happening. You know, and he always had the balls to do whatever the fuck he wanted to in those moments.
Yeah, there is a certain beauty to that kind of freedom.
Yeah, because everybody else, or at least that I know, and that, I mean, us and everybody else that we know are always held down by something, you know, whether it's a job, a family.
Well, it's called responsibility, and I don't think he had any of the
It's called leading, you know, a regular life for the most part, you know, a semi-normal life, but for him, he really took don't give a fuck to a different, you know, totally different planet. So, by this point, Allen's performances, which often resulted in considerable damage to venues and sound equipment, were regularly stopped by police or venue owners after only a few songs. The defecation.
So he would get up there, play for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then like, okay, show's over. Okay, bye.
Exactly. So Allen was charged with...
So it's like premature ejaculation, but like for shows.
Yeah, but dude, you were getting the fucking time of your life in those several minutes. If you were there, these places were packed. When I tell you, they were like bars that fit like 45 people. They had 100 kids in there, just packed in. And the thing is, you had to leave 40 feet of space between the crowd and Gigi because he would as you know, he would pick up the mic stand and beat the shit out of you. He would shit and throw it at you. He would drop his pants. He would spit on you. He would do anything he could.
He would set stuff on fire.
All while keeping beat. All while keeping beat and rhythm. It made no sense. So Allen was charged with assault and battery or indecent exposure a number of times. His constant touring was only stopped by jail time or long hospital stays for broken bones, blood poisoning, or other physical trauma. So he was either playing shows and touring, or he was in jail, or he was in the hospital. This is the only things that he did. Respect. I don't know what else to say. I mean, could you fucking do that? I don't think I could.
I don't know. I feel like if you've been doing it since
if my childhood was like
yeah.
that.
If that's like all you've known.
Yeah, it's just hatred and agony.
And, you know, just having that drive to be who you are.
Yeah, and also being... The thing is, like, Gigi, they don't really get into it here, but I've known from watching... I watched a documentary, and I watched other videos and stuff. He was generally really, really passionate about music.
Yeah.
Like, his... And you can actually see it in a lot of his songs, even though the lyrics are skewed. But, like, he writes all of them, and the music is great, which I think... I don't think he wrote the music, but the lyrics, some of them are very thoughtful and, like... awe-inspiring, to be honest.
Really well thought
of a
out.
Man. Yeah, of a man who's been sitting. He wrote a lot of his songs in prison or in the hospital or on the roads.
But he had a time to, you know, breathe. And
yeah, so he was constantly just having this, you know, flow, you know, his influence and flow of thoughts and creative ideas for a man who's genuinely passionate about music. So another attraction to Allen's performances were his continual threats of suicide. In 1989, Allen wrote to Maximum Rock and Roll magazine stating that he would commit suicide on stage on Halloween 1989. However,
1989. That's such
1989.
A,
yeah.
That's such a specific
Halloween 89.
I get Halloween, but like, why 89? Why not like? I mean, 91 or.
I mean, why shit on stage and eat it like he would do? However. He was in jail on that day. So, he continued...
So Halloween night, 1989, he was in jail?
He's in jail. But he continued his threat each following year, but ended up in prison each following Halloween. So, I'm pretty sure for like 3 years straight, he was in prison on Halloween because he just could not...
So, he's basically a Batman villain that kept getting like yeah. foiled, and then he would go
and
to jail.
Kept making promises, and the promises just never happened.
So he's a U.S. politician. Which
yeah, he's a closeted politician. To be honest, I would not be surprised if David Duke could become a Louisiana chairholder, I could easily see Gigi Allen as like the New York State 51st Annual Brigade of whatever the fuck.
In another alternate universe.
Yeah.
Gigi Allen is Senator Allen.
I mean, David Duke.
Senator Jesus Christ Allen.
David Duke, the president of the Ku Klux Klan, was a politician in Louisiana. Did you know that?
I knew that.
Yeah, with no one batting an eye. He ran like two terms. Like no one reelected him. They did not. It's insane.
Getting back to
yeah. So yeah. Gigi,
we are way off topic.
He continued his threat each day, or each Halloween, but he kept getting in jail. When asked why he did not follow through with his threats, Allen stated himself, with, his brother. I don't know. Okay. It says, with Gigi, you don't know what, you don't get what you expect, you get what you deserve.
What the fuck?
So, okay, no, Gigi Allen in the third person said, with Gigi, you don't get what you expect, and you get what you deserve. Interpret that as you will.
So it's everything he says is just a threat, basically.
He's in the fucking moment, man. he's living like
that can't
Larry.
Be his only excuse.
I think it's the mental instability and the drug use coming to the forefront. So he also stated that suicide should only be done when one had reached one's peak, meaning the afterlife, at one's strongest point and not at one's weakest. So he's laying some fucking Socrates on us here.
Why is it so fucking funny?
So Allen stated, you don't get what you expect, you get what you deserve. And then I stated, And then in June 93, Allen made an appearance on the Jane Whitney Show. The interview was famous for being his last interview and for Allen's aggression towards the audience.
This is the one that's like Whiteyville.
Yeah, if you look up G.G. Allen on YouTube, it's like the first thing that pops up.
He's wearing like the...
He's wearing a legit...
No, he's wearing the Nazi helmet.
He's wearing... If Heinrich Himmler was a strip club, like, dancer, it's basically what he would wear. You know what I mean? It's like super...
super short shorts.
It's super scandalous. Super
with
scandalous.
With Doc Martens.
It's very scandalous, and but it's... But he's wearing... He has like a...
Like a duster.
Like a World War One era, not like German... Not even Nazi, like a German just...
Yeah,
helmet. On. Like, it's just deep, deep fashion sense in the middle of buggy New York. The interview was famous for being his last interview and his aggression towards audiences. Allen openly stated that he would commit suicide and take his fans with him.
With him.
When questioned by Jane, he clarified that he would make them commit suicide as well or he would kill them. Allen also stated, at 35 years old, he could sleep with 12, 13, and 16-year-old girls, boys, and animals, and claimed that he raped both women and men at his concerts.
You see, this is where he kind of loses me.
That's the
like,
thing, is like, yeah, because I've said he's a horrible, horrible man. And it's really hard to take him away from...
It's hard to gauge if he was, like, serious or if he was saying that to be, like, a shocking person.
Yeah, because there's no actual proof of him ever
for,
doing...
Like, attention and stuff.
Yeah, the only proof we have is him, like, assaulting... Not assaulting, but, like, fighting people and defecating and stuff and nudity
there's
and
a
stuff.
Video of him, like, assaulting a chick.
Oh, yeah, he'll grab him and...
Yeah.
He'll...
He's, like, thrusting
I take that
his
back. There's several,
face
there's
and shit.
Several videos of him, like, no pants on, grabbing women and shoving them towards his
genitals.
But, the thing is, like I said, I respect the idea of what he had going on, and I respect that he was, you know, actually a passionate about music, and he has, he has a lot of good, like, punk songs for being, like, early, early punk. It's, like, legit punk. But the thing is, like, it's just when you get to this stuff, and I'm pretty sure he was a white, not a white supremacist, but I'm pretty sure he was obviously racist. I'm sure. I know his brother was. So it's one of those things where it's, you know, you gotta separate him from the art, I guess. But it's not really the art for me. It's just like the whole image is, it's hilarious and like, it's laughable now.
You look back on it, he's basically just a living caricature.
Exactly. He's like, it's, that's the thing that I respect is like the idea that he could do that and he did it. And he didn't give a fuck, but then it's also like...
He also was a shit-tastic person.
He was a, you know, horrific animal of a fucking human. Because that's the thing, is like, if he went to this interview and he just, like, sat down and, like, acted like a...
A normal person.
Then I would be like, this dude's... He's also... Because that's the thing, is like... It's like, oh, that dude's badass, but it's also like, that's not even the real him. That's just a stage act.
Well, the thing is, him being that way on the whatever the fuck... talk show
Jane
that,
Whitney show
yeah okay sorry
excuse me
I feel like that's just another layer to his shell
exactly
and that it I don't think anybody was ever gonna get to the real him
no the real him I think slipped away during like the mid 80s when his alcohol and drug use went up and his mental illness went up
yeah but at some point during the day you have to like just be yourself you know
that's the thing is like from all the accounts I've heard from the brothers the bandmates everybody they just said this is GG was always this way. And that's just always who he was, you know?
That's got to be exhausting.
I don't know. I mean, at least towards the end, that's what they say. Before, he was just constantly just trying to make music, you know? So, in late 1989, so we're going back a little bit, but... Allen was arrested and charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm less than murder of a female acquaintance in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Okay.
Never mind, he was in fact proof and he was guilty as charged of assault on a woman, so I'll take back anything that I said before. In a psychological evaluation made as a part of the trial, Allen was judged to have as having at least average intelligence and was described as courteous, cooperative, and candid.
We talking about the same guy?
Yeah.
We talking about the same fucking dude?
This is Jesus Christ Allen. The unnamed...
G.G. Allen would assault a woman. But Jesus Christ, Allen?
The second coming of the Messiah?
He's an upstanding citizen. What the fuck are you talking about?
The unnamed evaluator noted that Allen did not appear psychotic and seemed comfortable in his unorthodox lifestyle. However, the evaluator asserted Allen was dependent on alcohol and had a mixed personality disorder with narcissism, borderline and masochist features. I think borderline is a medical term for, like, borderline and, like, completely insane. You know what I mean? Or I'm going to look at the definition, but... Because I've never heard that used...
Well, no, it's kind of...
It's a personality disorder.
It's to emphasize that he's, like, a little bit of two things.
Oh, it's... Okay, borderline personality disorder. It's a mental illness characterized by a long-term pattern of unstable relationships, distorted self... distorted sense of self, and strong emotional reactions. That makes sense. So this was also... Okay, so this was just, like, the perfect brewing of mental illness, drugs, alcohol...
Abuse.
Yeah, it's the perfect brewing if you mix that with a guy who has a, what's it called? He has a platform. He has something, he has
a way to, like, express a pure form of expression.
Yeah, exactly. So it's in a way, it's kind of beautiful. Because the thing is, I've seen this done with people who have severe mental illness use music as a form of expression. And the thing is, a lot of times it's super brutal. Like, it's sad and it's
beautiful.
Yeah, but
they turn it into a positive.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, we were talking about, watched that video on, like, Daniel Johnston and Outsider Music, how there's people with severe mental issues.
Rock and roll McDonald's.
I saw a vampire bat. It was black. These are lyrics from one of one of the artists that we learned about. But is this people with severe mental issues who are making this, like, childlike music. But it's beautiful because that's, like, that's their way of...
It's, like, untouched. Like,
yeah,
it's not
tainted
by any other
exactly.
Influences.
It's pure. It's not because they want money. It's not because they want an image. It's not because they want anything. They don't even want to be good at music. They just want to...
And
wanna,
I'm not
this
mocking Rock and Roll McDonald's.
No.
That song legitimately sounds bad fucking ass
stuck
whenever I hear
it. Stuck in your fucking head, isn't
it? I'm driving home and I'm listening to Sonic Youth, but I'm not really listening to Sonic Youth.
No.
I'm listening to fucking Rock and Roll McDonald's in my goddamn skull.
McDonald's is the place to be. It is where the rock is rolled. Rock and roll McDonald's. So, Allen initially denied the charges, claiming that the woman was a willing participant in their sexual activities. Allen admitted to cutting her, burning her, and drinking her blood, but insisted that she did the same thing to him. See? You see? You understand now?
See, equal opportunity here.
See, Justin? Allen also claimed that inconsistencies in the woman's statement to authorities supported his assertions. Like, he's just his own lawyer right now. He's wearing the Nazi getup, and he's like, sir, please.
He has a blazer on. That's
he has
the
a blazer.
Difference.
And under it's just underwear and it's like shit stained and shit.
Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
May I approach the bench?
She clearly does not know what she's talking about. The judge in the case agreed that there were substantial inconsistencies in the woman's account. Ultimately, however, Allen plea bargained to a reduced charge of felonious assault, and he was in prison from Christmas of 1989 to March 26th of 91. So, like, he did a year
and
a half
to
your bid.
Yeah. Fucking, I like to think he got good at, like, representing himself legally.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Because he's been to court so many times.
Last 10 years,
thing.
He's been to court every Halloween. knows what's up. So it was during this time in prison.
If there's three things I know, it's the sky is blue, the sun will set, and on Halloween, Gigi will be in fucking prison.
I like it because he didn't get arrested on Halloween. It always happened like right before. He just could never kill himself on Halloween, man. So. It was during this time in prison from 89 to 91 that Allen began feeling re-energized about his life and mission. He wrote the G.G. Allen Manifesto during this period.
This
I mean, what
positive.
Else? What else are you going to call it?
Yeah. The Texas Nazis. Yeah. What you call it.
After his release from prison, Allen skipped parole to go on another tour, footage of which was shot for Todd Phillips' documentary, Hated G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies.
So this is the Todd Phillips that made Joker?
This is the Todd Phillips that made... The Hangover, War Dogs, Joker, he's done a couple films, and yeah, he recorded a documentary, and he pretty much has all the known footage of GG for the most part.
Holy shit.
During the early 90s, late 80s, this is early 90s after his release in prison, and this is when GG was with the Murder Junkies, which is one of the bands that he led as a frontman. The film contained graphic scenes from a performance Allen gave at the at the Rock Club Space at Chase in Manhattan's East Village. A heavily intoxicated Alan stripped naked, defecated on the floor, wiped his feces on himself, and threw feces into the audience. He also threw beer bottles, breaking a woman's nose, and assaulted several other people in the crowd. Clips were included from other Alan performances, as well as interviews with Alan, his band, and their fans. The film was released in 1994. I think that's the one I sent to you where he... It's the first song, punk song, so it's like a minute 45. First song, Alan comes up. He does the same thing at every show, I've noticed. He comes out in a garment, like a robe, and on the back says...
Like a duster.
Yeah, on the back it says, GG Allin, the Murder Junkies. The other guys are already playing the hit song, Bite It, You Scum, which is actually a great song. But they already start playing it, and so he comes in with the jacket. He takes it off. He's in his bare underwear. Nothing else. Underwear, nothing else. He has very symbolic and cool like prison tattoos. They're actually kind of cool.
Yeah, not gonna lie. They say there's no way those weren't done like with a fucking
Kool-Aid,
a pen, fucking like and like in somebody's pen. Basement,
stick and poke in a 1989 prison. But he comes out and he's in the robe and everybody else, the band is already playing, and the band the whole time before he even gets on stage, the band looks pissed.
Yeah,
and they do this every night all year long, and the band's playing and they're like. You know, they're sloppy. It's a punk band, but they're trying, and you know that...
They're getting into it.
They're getting high energy and stuff, but then Alan comes out. Gigi. Comes out. He takes the robe off. First thing he does is take the microphone and hits... And if you've ever held a microphone, it's hard as a fucking rock.
Yeah.
And it has... It's like a cheese grater. And he hits himself in his bald head as many times as he can until he starts bleeding. And
I'm assuming this is not his microphone. It belongs to, like, the fucking venue or something.
Is it the touring microphone? I do not know.
There's some fucking guy that, like, runs the equipment, and they're like, God damn it.
It's definitely not a Yeti mic, I'll tell you that. So it's not a condenser. So he hits himself until he starts bleeding, which only takes a couple slaps. He's done it before. And then you can tell the band is already pissed. They're like, fucking AGG. And then, so I'm like, okay, that's punk. You know, hitting yourself in the head till you bleed, whatever. You know, okay, whatever. I've seen worse in fucking Sex Pistols concerts. He's just in his underwear, which is, you know, a little bit off-putting. As soon as he takes off the robe, everybody in the crowd backs up 40 feet. They've been here before. Gigi begins singing the song very brutally compared to a very deeper key than they would in the recording where he sings more light. So he's almost like screaming. And then he just drops, he drops trow, takes his undies off. He's butt-ass naked.
Birthday suit.
No, he's butt-ass naked.
Yeah, that's what your birthday suit is.
Oh. Is that where that comes from? I don't fucking know these bullshit. Bullshit expressions you lay upon me at this very vulnerable time in my...
You gonna be all right?
You gonna be all right? So he takes off...
Phone's blown up.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking asshole.
So he takes off his undies, and he's butt-ass naked. And I'm sure this isn't a big surprise. He has a very, very small penis, which is not. We're not shaming anybody, but I'm just saying.
Like it's small, as in like a mushroom among the grass.
It's small, like... as in like you understand why he's doing this. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, okay. Napoleon complex, maybe, but which it makes it so much worse that it's that small though, because he's just jumping around and singing the song. People are like. At first, they're like, oh, man. And then they're like, okay. And then they just start moshing again because they're like, whatever. I guess he's just naked.
That's just
Then Gigi squats in the middle of the song, and he shits on the floor.
Yes.
Todd Phillips gets all of it. He gets the shot. he gets the left camera angle wing shot, dolly shot.
Fucking Dutch angles.
Yeah, exactly. And then Gigi turns around and gets real close to it as he's singing the song, which most of the lyrics are just... Bite it, you scum, here I come. Bite it, you scum. So he's singing that as he's very close to
modern
the
Shakespeare.
Very close to defecation. Already people are, you know, starting to freak the fuck out. He picks it up, he holds it as he's singing, and then he just smears it across his face.
Mm-hmm.
He smears it across his face, all around his body, And then he picks it up and throws it at the crowd. There's a visible look of disgust and anger on everybody's face. And then the police come. In total, the show was 2 minutes, 36 seconds
long. So, like,
long.
The police would be called, or, like, the police knew what was going on, and they were just like, okay, we're waiting on it.
It was kind of just, like, it showed, like, what he was doing, and then it just kind of cut to, like, police outside. Oh, okay. So, I don't know if they just...
So, it was, like, a Todd Phillips just, like, okay, and...
Yeah, I think it was probably... The club probably shut it down and then called the police, and yeah. Then the police came, and Gigi... The thing is, when Gigi's not on stage, he's actually, like... From what I've heard is that he's was just hanging out. He's like a normal person. They said it's when he got on stage, everything came loose. That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
is
it must suck to like work on a song, and then never be able to get more than 10 minutes into a fucking a set.
Yeah, that's the thing that like all the band members say is that they were like, yeah, recording and songwriting with him was fine. Everything in the bus was fine. He was just a normal guy. He was, you know, he was always a little, he had some anger issues and stuff, but that was just from childhood and whatnot.
I would do like two shows with him before I'd be like, all right, I'm done with this fucking band.
But they said they could just never perform because he would just, as soon as he started performing, he would just lose it, which I guess is the ultimate theatric in a fucking live show, you know, but it's also like, you're kind of just like never, you can never progress in that kind of, you know, that kind of environment. So, in 1991, so we're going back a little bit earlier, Gigi recorded an album called The Murder Junkies. Had 10 tracks and 10 spoken word pieces. Allen considered this album to be that which most accurately captured his persona and stated philosophy on life.
Isn't it like his last one, too?
Yeah, pretty sure. It was also during this period that he recorded the album War in My Head, I'm Your Enemy. These all have different backing bands, too, I gotta add. So he's basically just, like, kind of like an Elvis character, where, like, not musically, but, like, just in the sense that he would just get, like, backing bands to play his songs that he wrote. So, Allen's growing notoriety led to appearances on various television shows. Geraldo? He was on Greg Giraldo's show.
He was on fucking Greg Giraldo's, the guy that, like, opened up... Al Capone's vault, and there was nothing in it.
Yeah.
And he looked like an asshole with his stupid fucking mustache.
He was also on the Jerry Springer show.
local boy.
Yeah. And the Jane Whitney show. Yeah, at the time of his death, Allen was making plans for a spoken word album. He mentioned a somewhat unlikely European tour, enthusiastically talking about it in the hours before his death.
Aw. Personal life. Oh man.
Gigi Allen married Sandra Farrow.
That he's married?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
There is no doubt she is not related to Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
Sandra Farrow on October 6, 1978. They divorced in 1985. But this was when he was right before it all came crashing down.
So he's married the whole time basically.
1978 to 1985.
It's a long time.
This also probably adds to why he fell apart at literally in 85-86.
That does kind of make sense.
Right before his prison stints. But in the mid-80s, Allen became involved with a teenage girl from Garland, Texas named Tracy Denault. She became pregnant, and their daughter, Nico Ann Denault, was born March 13, 1986.
Wait, Gigi has a kid?
Mm-hmm. Daughter.
That's fucking crazy.
Nico chose to distance herself from her family.
Oh, you don't say.
Allen and Tracy Denault were never married. At the time of his death, Gigi Allen's girlfriend was Liz Minkowski. Minkowski was 17 when they met.
Super Polish name.
Yeah. They met when they appeared together alongside Minkowski's sister and father on the Jerry Springer show.
Repeat that again?
Minkowski and Allen met when they appeared together alongside Minkowski's sister and father on the Jerry Springer show.
How the fuck?
I think the episode was like... My daughter's part of a cult, and then it's like Gigi, and he's like, she just wants to be with me. You understand?
She just wants to fuck me.
Yeah, and her father and sister were sitting there going like, Liz, please.
I don't think I approve of this.
Yeah, and they were dating, so they started dating. Keep in mind, Gigi was about 35, dating a 17-year-old girl.
That's not cool at all.
Yeah, he was completely just using like cult tactics, like Manson.
Being a predator. Yeah.
Yeah, he was just, you know. Because he was like, I'm this punk god, which he made himself out to be as hard as he could. They also appeared together on the Jane Whitney show with another Allen fan called Wendy. and beliefs. Okay. Here's some of his beliefs. Alan was an extreme individualist, misanthrope. He was an extreme individualist.
Just completely blazed over that. Hang on, let me look it up.
Okay, a misanthrope is a person who dislikes humankind and avoids human society. Here, hold on. Alan was an extreme individualist.
That's pronounced misanthrope, which means someone who dislikes being a part of society and people involved in society.
He was also anti-authoritarian, promoting lawlessness and violence against police officers in many of his lyrics. So he's hip. He's hip. He's ahead of his time. His essay, The G.G. Allen Manifesto, was intended to summarize his personal philosophy. But he revealed on Geraldo that he believed his body was to be the temple of rock and roll, and that his flesh, blood, and bodily fluids were a communion to the people.
As the second...
His word's not mine.
As the second coming of our Messiah.
Yeah. Another reason given for his onstage lyrics... Another reason given for his onstage antics by Dino, the drummer of the band, was that he wanted to draw a parallel between his actions and a society that's going crazy with violence. So I guess he was trying to, like, personify his antics to represent what society was promoting.
So he wants to be a mirror to society?
I guess. And, I get it now. He wanted to be a mirror to society, and then he was like, see how disgusted you guys are with me?
Yeah.
That was his thing.
That's what you guys really are.
Yeah. Which makes sense,
I guess. And then Todd Phillips made Joker.
That's the timeline. He also said that if he was not a performer, he would probably be a serial killer or a mass murderer. I like, those are the only options. There's nothing else.
Oh, there was.
What?
A voice crack.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the second voice crack.
Are we going to keep...
Orange Podcast.
What, are we going to keep track of them?
Yeah, I think so.
Fucking keep track. Every time we fucking fart or some shit, just keep a fucking keep a tally going.
Don't get
you
mad because
you were the first one last time.
Yeah, and I owned up to it like a fucking man.
Regarding Alan's views on death, he believed in some form of the afterlife. He planned to kill himself on Halloween. Stop due to prison sentence.
I like that this is like the 80th time we've mentioned he planned to kill himself on Halloween.
It's a fucking plan and a half. He explained his views on death in the film Hated, stating, "It's like I've got this wild soul that just wants to get out of this life. It's too confined in this life. I think that to take yourself out at your peak, if you could die at your peak, your strongest point, then your soul would be that much stronger in the next existence."
That's weirdly deep and
as fuck.
Philosophical in a way.
I don't think he was, like, dumb. I just think it was just everything together at that time all added up to make him what he was, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't anybody's fault except his father's.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Alan's last show was on June 27th, 1993 at a small club called The Gas Station, a punk venue located inside a former gas station in Manhattan. During the second song, the venue cut the power. During the second song of a punk concert, which is about 2 minutes and 15 seconds in.
All right, Bob, we've had enough.
Yeah.
Cut the fucking...
The venue cut the power, after which he trashed the club, walked across the street naked, and then continue on, now wearing shorts but still covered in blood and feces, throughout the neighborhood, followed by a large group of fans. Which I would love to be fucking walking to work on fucking Manhattan. It's like...
Well, this is also like 93, so yeah. Like New York is still coming out of that...
Oh, yeah. There's still...
Grime
Giuliani
period.
Just got in. So he was...
probably wouldn't be that, like, striking to see it.
Yeah, now I think about it, they're like, oh, what day is it? Tuesday?
Yeah, it's...
After walking the streets for almost an hour, Alan eventually went to his friend Johnny Puke's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Puke. There, he and others continued to party and use drugs. Sometime during the evening, Alan and Lard ingested large amounts of heroin, in which he accidentally overdosed and slipped into an unconscious state. Sometime in the early morning of June 28th, Alan died from the effects of his heroin overdose. Later that morning, someone noticed that Alan still lay motionless in the same place where he left him and called for an ambulance. Alan was pronounced dead at the scene, 2 months short of his 37th birthday.
Aww.
Those 37 years. were filled with more experience than anyone else will ever have in 100 years. I mean, prison.
Prison. Fucking hospital.
Talk show. Prison.
I mean, Geraldo.
Heroin.
And then Jerry Springer.
I mean, his funeral is another one that's...
Yeah, his funeral sounds insane, too.
His funeral took place on July 3rd, 93.
It's the day after my birthday.
Yeah, in his native New Hampshire. At his funeral, Alan's bloated, unpreserved corpse was dressed in his black leather jacket and trademark jockstrap. Alan was buried with a bottle of Jim Beam beside him in the casket, as he requested. Openly stated in his self-penned acoustic country ballad, When I Die. As a part of his brother's request, the mortician was instructed not to wash the corpse or apply any makeup.
Oh my god!
He's been dead for like 5 days. 5-6 days, dude.
Let him see me. Let him see it all.
Fucking A. Alan's funeral became a low-level party.
I can't imagine the conversation his brother had to have with, like, the funeral director.
He's like, he has the fucking fucked up Hitler stash. Like, green hair sideways in a Ku Klux Klan shirt. And he's like, this is what he would have wanted.
And the fucking funeral director has to look at him with a straight face and be like, all right.
have you remember God's Gift, the movie?
No.
Oh, you never seen with Philip Seymour Hoffman?
No, I gotta see it.
Well, there's a scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman's son is dead. And the mortician is trying to get back at him, so he leaves his dead son out in the fucking rain.
Oh, God's pocket.
Yeah, God's pocket, not God's gift.
Okay.
God's pocket.
Yeah, I've seen God's pocket, yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman has to pick him up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Gigi, we're just fucking lying around some fucking dingy apartment, dead as fuck. And they're like, well, we gotta get him in the fucking coffin somehow. All
right,
somehow.
Guys, this is my pad. That's yeah. The breakfast nook. That's Gigi Allen.
That's Gigi Allen's corpse in the corner. If you don't touch it, it'll be fine. If you touch it, it gets all wonky. Alan's funeral became a low-level party. He's fucking in a jockstrap laying down with Jim Beam, and people are just like, hey, Steve, I haven't seen you in like 15 years. How you doing, buddy? Hey, I don't know. How's the family?
Yeah, let's get fucking ripped.
Friends posed with his corpse, placing drugs and whiskey into his mouth.
I mean...
As the funeral ended, his brother put a pair of headphones on Alan. The headphones were plugged into a portable cassette player, which was loaded with a copy of The Suicide Sessions.
Which is...
It's one of his studio albums. It was released shortly before his arrest in 89.
I don't know, man. If I was about to be shoved off into the afterlife... The last thing I'd want to hear is my own fucking voice. I'd want to hear, like, you know...
I think he was fucking long dead by then.
Like to listen to Cat Powers or some shit like that. Something comforting.
So, here on Wikipedia, it has his legacy, which they have at a lot of, like, famous people's... the end of their pages, and it just says pretty much... it says that video footage of his final soundcheck concert and aftermath from his final concert on the day of his death is online and on the DVD, Hated, the film about him. And his grave was frequently vandalized with urine, feces, cigarette butts, and alcohol by fans. An act that was greatly discouraged by Gigi's mother, Arlita. I think that's how you pronounce it, Arlita. His tombstone has since been removed because of this.
Aw, that's not cool.
That's fucked up, yeah. I mean, I get why they're doing it, because...
Yeah, there's other tombstones around him, and they're probably getting that shit blown onto them. That too,
but yeah, his mother is, like,
yeah,
sitting there. Just
I mean, it would suck, because, like, how would you feel if, like, Grandpa died, and, like, his fucking tombstone was constantly getting, like, cigarette butts and, like, empty beer bottles, like, blown onto it, because he just so happens to be next to a dead fucking obscure punk artist.
But he has a decently large discography. Just about everything is, like, basically a solo album, because he just wrote all of his own songs and did all of that, but he just got different bands to back him.
Until they got tired of his shit.
Yeah, so, we didn't open with a Gigi Allen song. I think we might close with one.
Yeah? Which one are you thinking?
I'm thinking Bite It, You Scum, because it's, it's A, the only one that, and we're going to say ahead of time.
That's Gigi Allen's Freebird, if you ask me.
And if you're listening, it's extremely, It's not suitable for work at all. It has a couple... the lyrics aren't too bad, but it has a couple lyrics that mention, like, cum and a couple other, like, fuck and a couple other words. But we felt like it was only necessary, or at least I feel like it's only necessary to play at least
one. So what did you learn from this?
What I learned? Well, Justin has to get serious about this. No, I learned...
Sorry, this is not going to become a History by Hopkins, all right?
No,
sorry.
I'm joking, but I'm just saying, I learned, you know, because I knew about GG before. I knew about punk and I knew about the whole scene. The thing is, you know, it's actually been kind of awesome because I've rediscovered a lot of the punk artists that I forgot about for a long time. And I've been getting back into them recently. And it's all because I was just researching GG and watching videos and learning about him. And also, he actually doesn't have... Some of his songs aren't too bad, not going to lie. Some of his spoken word is really fucking deep. But also, it's just if you watch the live shows, it's a hoot. But
good old hoot nanny.
Yeah, I didn't learn anything particularly deep or, like, you know, anything that embodied me or, like, spoke to me in a certain way, except for the fact that, you know, this is a... Because I think, you know, I know people have struggled with mental illness, and I think I have to a certain extent. I think we both have. Not mental illness, but, you know, disorder. We have family history of it, so it's...
Yeah, trying to overcome the past.
Exactly, and to see something this extreme still somehow be able to be made into a form of art, essentially, is kind of interesting to me, because it's like, even someone as sadistic and fucked up with these values and this kind of performance...
And that history
still somehow... could make a rockin' song.
Did
man.
What he wanted to do.
Yeah, he could make poetry and he wrote songs and he did all this stuff as an art expression of a man who's completely deranged and sick. And, you know, it inspires me to do, you know, to with what we do or what I do or anything, you know.
Goals.
Yeah, did you learn anything from it?
I did, actually. I didn't expect to. But, so I was thinking to myself, like, before I read up on this or I heard you tell me about it, I thought, like, you know, there's no way that being yourself or, you know, aspiring to be yourself could be, like, detrimental to you.
Yeah.
And, like, being true to yourself and, like, wanting to become something positive. Because I'm sure he thought to himself, like, becoming a punk star or whatever.
Yeah, like
he wanted to be like a positive goal for him.
Yeah, he wanted to be like a demigod.
Yeah, and that to me is just an example of like even being what you like being true to yourself in that way. Mm. Too much of anything will kill you. Well, being too much of true to yourself in that respect can actually fucking kill you too.
Because in my opinion, I think he was not like born this way, and I don't think he truly believed in it. Like, his whole life. Because, like, serial killers, there's always something off with them.
Yeah.
But for Gigi, because Gigi easily could have killed people. He could have done more sick and disgusting things.
Yeah.
Than he did. But the thing is, like, for him, it was just, like...
He had the show to focus it.
Yeah, by the sound of it, it was... Performing was the only thing preventing him from going completely insane.
Yeah.
Which is funny, though, because when he did perform, he went basically completely insane. But it was him expressing himself, and I also think he was so vulnerable to be up there expressing his art that's his reaction to being that vulnerable is, well, maybe I should do this and then do that, and then it's like, oh, they can't shy away from me now, or it's like now they have to look at me, now they have to listen, but it's like his head was so fucked up he thought that was the right thing. So it, you know, it gets a lot deeper than it is just, you know, reading it on paper. But
This is arguably our longest podcast.
It might be. I mean, we still have editing to do. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, it's up there. I mean, this is definitely something we're talking about. We're just rolling, so it's just,
I definitely like this looser, vibe that we got going on with the topic thing.
Yeah, I think we should keep topics, but we shouldn't keep ourselves tethered to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I also felt like, if you're still listening by this episode, which I believe this episode 4
yeah.
or 5.
4. This is 4.
I'm glad you're listening, and I hope you keep listening. There's more on the way, but...
Yeah, by the way, if you were still listening, we fucking love you.
Like, yeah, also.
It means the goddamn world to us that you're doing this.
Yeah, we're shooting for once a week, but Yeah, or at least I felt. Because if you listen to the first one, I feel like we're kind of tethered to what the task at hand.
Yeah.
So we're only able to do what our brains can do within that, you know, within that platform and within that situation or whatever we were talking about at the time, that topic.
Yeah, I feel like we were just like, I felt we were way too focused in like getting the facts and everything, the timeline straight, that we didn't really have a whole lot of fun with it.
Which I guess could be fine, because I mean, I've heard some serious podcasts that are good, but it's also like, we're just not that serious to begin with, and we want to just kind of chill out and be comfortable, so it's, you know, we crack jokes. We have a couple.
Oh, you shoot the shit?
You want to
have a stickler for a tickler?
Yeah.
Alright, guys, so before we head out, I just want to give a shout-out to our audio tech, Ramon Rodriguez. You can find him on Instagram if you look up Ramreezy. He is the shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, guys, we'll see you in the next one, alright?
Yep, and if you could, please follow the Instagram account, just Agent Orange Podcast. Follow us on Spotify, wherever you want to listen, Google Podcasts. I think we're on Breaker. A couple other ones are probably up on Apple and whatnot, so best thing you do to support us, just keep listening.
Yup.
Alright, I'll see you next time. More and more. Let me, you pick your heart. So